Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. One of the founders of the genre now known as thrash metal, Scott Ian was a typical Jewish kid in 1960s Queens, into comics and the movies. His life changed forever when he saw bands like Kiss and the Ramones, and before long, he was on the road himself, the heartbeat of the band Anthrax, contemporaries with bands like Metallica. Improbably, he's led the group through several lineups for more than three decades now, overcoming plenty of adversity and reaching new fans by playing with the rap group Public Enemy and appearing on a slew of TV shows. Scott Ian's new memoir is called I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, which is published by Perseus Books. Scott Ian, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, thank you.
Take us back to your childhood. What was it like before the tattooed man we see today? What were you like as a kid?
Strangely enough, I was bald with a goatee. I only ever think of myself as being this guy. Sometimes it's kind of hard to remember, and because I'm really not the type of person to look back and reminisce and any of that kind of stuff. It was really going through the process of writing stories out and doing my talking shows and then moving into writing the book that, you know, I spent obviously a large amount of time in my past. And some of that was the way I would kind of help myself stir up, you know, who I was back then was I would look at photos. You know, I would actually just like kind of stare at pictures and try and put myself into the shoes of that kid at 5 or 12 or 18 or 27 or, you know, and really try and not just think of, okay, you know, what gigs were we playing then, or when I was 5, what toys was I playing with, or, but really just trying to get into my head and really trying to remember, like, what motivated me on a daily basis, like when I was 8 and I woke up in the morning, like, what was I thinking about and things like that. And of course, it's not like I got all the answers I was looking for, you know, because I don't think anyone's memory is that clear, but it did definitely help, you know, to look at pictures and, you know, and to think I was a very what I consider to be normal kid growing up in Queens, much like all the other kids I was hanging out with. You know, we were in the sports and comic books and horror movies and, you know, slowly started getting into music, me more than other kids, because I started playing guitar when I was about 8 years old, whereas a lot of my friends didn't start playing musical instruments. But, you know, just into all that kind of stuff, riding the bus to school and talking about the Yankees, you know, I mean, or the that week's batch of comics that came out. Or, you know, I wasn't like I was some kid, you know, who locked himself in his room and, you know, was workshopping guitar 24/7 in the hopes of that this is what I was going to do with my life. Like, even when I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life, I still wasn't that kid. I was still out and social and hanging out with my friends and only ever wanting to jam with other people, you know. So I guess the really long answer to your question is I was just kind of like a normal social kid who loved to hang out.
And then somewhere along the way, that changed. Something changed for you, and you know, before long, you found yourself on stage and on a path that you're still on.
Well, I mean, no, none of that changed because I'm still that guy. The only thing that got added into the mix was the fact that, you know, guitar became my job. You know, playing guitar, writing songs, being in a band, that became my livelihood. Everything else stayed the same. Someone asked me about this the other day, like, you know, what's changed since you were a kid? And I thought about it for a second. I'm like, well, really nothing. I'm still into the same stuff. I'm still into sports, and I'm still into comics, and I'm still into horror, and I'm still into music, obviously. And so, you know, in a weird way, nothing's changed when it comes to all that kind of stuff. I'm still the same, like, nerdy kid that I was into all those things. It just so happens that I play in a band for a living. You know, I got to make that my life, which was my dream, obviously. And then, I was able to make that dream happen.
When you were coming up in music, there really wasn't a word for the kind of stuff you play. And you haven't made any secret of the stain you have for kind of the hair metal that sprang up around the same time. You obviously went in a different direction. So how did you find the kind of thing that you do? You know, how did you find that sweet spot for yourself when there really weren't too many people playing that kind of music who came before you necessarily?
No idea. You know, there's so many factors involved. Obviously, the music that we were influenced by, you know, has everything to do with it. You know, we were listening to Maiden and Motorhead and Priest and the Ramones and AC/DC and Kiss and, you know, you name it. You know, Charlie and Frankie and I, and even earlier than that, Danny Wilker and I, you know, we were listening to the same kind of music. It's just what we were into. And so obviously so much of that has to do with the type of music you start playing as a guitar player and or, you know, a songwriter. And then, of course, a band forms. You know, we form a band and we start trying to write our own songs. And you know, that's obviously going to be influenced by what you've been listening to, as well as the fact that you're just not good at what you're doing yet. You know, unless you're, I don't know, the Beatles and, you know, some other bands, Led Zeppelin and, you know, other bands that have just made, I mean, there's a pretty big list of bands that have made incredible debut records, and just out of the box, they were amazing songwriters. But I can't say that for us. We were just trying our best and, you know, doing the best we could and being not so good at the craft yet as songwriters and as musicians, I think had a lot to do with the sound as well, because, you know, it was certainly simpler than some of the stuff we were listening to. We were playing faster for two reasons. We did like to play fast, and also we weren't good at tempo yet. So there's so many of these factors involved in the early days of what we were doing, and I think why we ended up sounding the way we did, and then obviously running with that, because it sounded different. It was metal, but it was a little bit different than the metal that came before us. So, you know, and that's the sound that we enjoyed and the sound that we liked to play and the sound that we were having fun playing. So, you know, kind of all of that, it just all, I guess, ties in together.
What surprised me is that it seems that there was more camaraderie between the big four bands than, you know, the popular press has made it seem over the years. And nowadays, you guys have gone on tours together and, you know, people have grown up a lot. But even in the early days, I mean, you were right along there with Metallica all throughout. And it seems like there was a lot of friendly competition.
I wouldn't even say competition. Really, to me, there was no competition. I don't ever feel like we were looking at Metallica in a competitive way, really. I mean, you know, there's certainly moments where there was certainly envy at some points because they were ahead of us. You know, there's no doubt in my mind. It's just the way it was. You know, Metallica was definitely ahead of us as songwriters and musicians. And you know, so just getting to see some of the stuff they were doing, knowing that eventually we were going to get there, whether it was getting on, you know, like when they got on the big Ozzy tour in 1986 or, you know, things like that. It was kind of like, holy cow, you know, that's amazing. You know, look where this is going. And there certainly would be moments of envy there, but at the same time, knowing that this is going to happen for us too. Like, we're next. We always kind of had that feeling of, well, anything Metallica does, they're just opening a door for everybody else. Or anything we do, it's just opening a door. You know, any ground we break, anything that, you know, that happens that's different, that's opening a door for what everybody else is doing. And I never looked at it as competition. I never felt like, you know, oh, well, they did that, well, we got to do this. Or I never felt that way at all.
I think one thing many people don't know about you necessarily is that your father-in-law is Meatloaf, and you have a very funny story of how you finally won him over into your life. But what has that been like? I mean, here's a guy, you know, you looked up to as a kid, and now he's in your family.
Yeah, it's weird. I guess there was a thing online the other day. It just said Bat Out of Hell came out like 37 years ago, something like that. And it was just trippy thinking about that. That immediately put me back to a time and place in 1977. Like, I remember hearing that record. My dad had that album, and we listened to that album all the time. I was a massive fan of that record, and got to see him on that tour, you know, with that original touring band at this place called the Calderon Concert Hall on Long Island. I don't think it exists anymore. And so, yeah, such a big fan of that album. I was so into it. And so there's still times. I mean, right before you called, he actually called here looking for Pearl. And I thought it was an interview. So I'm like, hello? And he's like, Scott. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, it's me. I'm like, oh, I thought you were my interview. Sorry. He's like, oh, you got an interview? Good luck. And, you know, I'll talk to you later. But, yeah, it's just – it's obviously, I've known the guy for 14 years now, and he's my father-in-law, and he's the grandfather to my son, and he's family. But there's still that part of me. There's still that 13-year-old kid sometimes, you know, that I can't help it, you know, because – It was such a big thing in my life, you know, at that point in time, and you know, in the same way so much other music was. So it's just trippy for me. That's the only way I could put it. You know, sometimes it's very surreal that, you know, you're sitting watching a football game with Meatloaf. It's just like, wow. I mean, you know, for Pearl, it's her whole life. It's not weird to her, but that's her dad. But for me, it still gets a little. I still turn into a weird 13-year-old.
When people approach you, do they know you from your band or do they know you from VH1?
Oh, both. I don't know if the VH1 thing is as much anymore, just because whether they still, I don't even know if they still do those list shows that I was doing a lot, you know, a lot for a while. So I haven't done anything on VH1 in a long time. So, you know, for a while, yes, I was on VH1 a lot. So there's a lot of face recognition because people have no clue who I am other than they know I was one of those talking heads on a show that they watched, you know, spewing stupid trivia. But, yeah, I don't know. Probably still a lot of people just remember seeing me on TV because, you know, a lot more people probably have seen my face on TV than have actually bought an Anthrax record. That's for sure.
And you're recognizable, of course. There's a picture of you as a kid in your memoir in a Yankee shirt, and you eventually got to play at Yankee Stadium on that Big Four tour a couple of years back. What was that like for you?
I mean, that's the peak for me. You know, the ultimate thing would have been to right there on stage just retired because it's all downhill for after that. You know, as far as playing live goes, there's really no other venue in the world I would be as excited about playing, you know, than Yankee Stadium. So in a weird way, that's a bummer because it's never going to be as good as that again. Obviously, I still get excited about playing live. But unless we do Yankee Stadium again, it's, for me, there's nothing as special as that.
Scott Ian is the author of his memoir, I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, and he is involved in several projects, including being a founding member of the band Anthrax. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the Roundtable today, and thanks for your time.
Oh, right on. Thank you.
And you're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.